Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Donna Adelson.
It's not every day you see a 70-something grandmother trying to get a murder trial judge kicked off her case. But then again, this isn't your average grandmother, and this definitely isn't your average trial. Donna Adelson, the matriarch at the center of a murder-for-hire conspiracy, nearly a decade in the making, is locked in a legal battle that's finally heading to trial. But in April 2025, just weeks before she's set to face a jury, her legal team made one last dramatic push to shake up the game by trying to disqualify the judge presiding over the entire case. So let's be clear, this wasn't some procedural formality. Donna's defense didn't quietly file a motion and move on. No, they filed the legal equivalent of slamming the brakes on the whole trial and yelling, "We want a new driver!" Judge Stephen Everett has been overseeing this case, and by all public accounts, doing so with a pretty even hand. But after a series of rulings that didn't go their way, most notably his comments about possibly allowing certain evidence to be used against them, Donna's lawyers decided to go after the man with the gavel. The exact details of the motion were sealed, but the playbook here isn't hard to read. They likely argued the judge was biased or had created the appearance of bias, legal buzzwords used when you want to suggest the referee's wearing the other team's jersey. And while Florida law does allow for disqualification under certain conditions, it's a tough sell. The standard is high. The motion has to show a well-founded fear that the judge can't be impartial. It's not code for "we don't like your rulings." It means something more like, "Your Honor has a personal stake in this or has said something so prejudicial, no reasonable person would believe we're getting a fair shake." And Judge Everett didn't buy it, not the first time, not the second time. Donna's team filed an amended version of the motion after the first was rejected, kind of like saying, "No, okay, how about now?" And he still said no. There was no detailed explanation, no courtroom theatrics, no long-winded opinion, just a judicial equivalent of, "Nice try, let's move on." That's how April started for Donna Adelson, by losing what was probably her boldest attempt to reset the game. But the defense wasn't done swinging. A motion to disqualify the judge is one thing. The next logical step when you're up against the wall is to buy more time. So they filed a motion for continuance, asking the court to delay the June 3rd trial. Now, unlike the disqualification attempt, this one actually has a decent shot at success, at least procedurally. The defense says it needs more time to prepare, citing the massive scope of discovery. We're talking tens of thousands of pages, including over 80,000 emails that were only recently turned over. That's not just a lot of reading. It's a digital haystack, and they're looking for needles. Emails, call logs, court filings. It's a flood of evidence that would be hard for any team to sort through in time, let alone when your client is facing life in prison. That motion hasn't been ruled on yet. A hearing is scheduled for April 30th, and until then, the June 3rd trial date still stands. But this delay attempt came on the heels of yet another loss. The judge recently denied a motion to suppress a jailhouse call, presumably one involving Donna, that the prosecution wants to use at trial. These recorded phone calls, usually made from jail while the defendant is awaiting trial, often end up being a goldmine for prosecutors. People forget they're being recorded, they vent, they strategize, they slip up. And if you're Donna Adelson, who allegedly has a reputation for trying to control the narrative, those calls could be devastating. if the jury hears them. The court's denial of the suppression motion means that whatever was said on those calls is coming in, and the prosecution intends to use it. This ruling, combined with the refusal to remove the judge, paints a pretty clear picture. The court is not entertaining procedural side quests. This trial is happening, and it's happening on schedule, unless the April 30th hearing says otherwise. Meanwhile, the broader posture of the case has shifted into full-on pre-trial warfare. Both sides are still filing motions, some sealed, some public, trying to define the rules of engagement. Discovery deadlines have been pushed back slightly, mostly to accommodate depositions, including a notable one, Charlie Adelson, Donna's son, who's already been convicted for his role in the murder, is scheduled to be deposed from prison next month. Whether he actually says anything meaningful or pleads the fifth remains to be seen, but it's clear the defense is looking to fill in gaps and prepare for any surprises. And that's what all of this really comes down to, preparing for what's next. With the judge still in place, the trial date looming, and key evidence officially admitted, the pressure is building. The defense is in a corner trying to chip away at the case from every angle they can, stalling where possible, narrowing what can be said in court, and maybe most of all, hoping to control how Donna is seen by the jury. Because this isn't just about facts, it's about framing. That's the fight unfolding in these final weeks before trial. Not who did what, but how the story gets told once the courtroom lights come on. The defense needs time to reshape Donna into a sympathetic figure, an aging mother caught in a family tragedy, not a mastermind behind a murder. The prosecution, meanwhile, is positioning her as the final piece of a calculated family conspiracy that's already taken down her son and implicated her daughter. And the clock is ticking. Whether the trial stays on the rails or gets pushed down the calendar will depend on how persuasive that April 30th hearing turns out to be. But no matter what happens, one thing is certain. The momentum is not on Donna Adelson's side. This is where things start to feel less like a legal procedure and more like psychological theater. Because before a single witness takes the stand in Donna Adelson's murder-for-hire trial, the courtroom is already hosting a quieter but no less important war. The fight over what the jury gets to hear, what they get to see, and what they're allowed to feel. And at the center of that fight is a book. Yes, a novel. Not a legal document, not an intercepted phone call, not a witness statement, but a fictional story written years ago by Donna's daughter, Wendy Adelson. The book is called This Is Our Story, and while it isn't on trial, it might as well be. Because the prosecution says this book, though technically fiction, offers a window into Wendy's mindset before Dan Markell was murdered. More importantly, they argue it reveals something about the family dynamics that fueled the entire case. Dynamics that include Donna Adelson herself. The defense naturally wants it kept far away from the courtroom. They argue it's irrelevant, it's prejudicial, it's fiction. In their eyes, using a made-up story to suggest motive in a very real murder is like trying to convict someone based on their favorite crime movie. They've gone on record saying that the character in the book isn't Wendy. The setting isn't Tallahassee, and the husband being resented isn't Dan Markell. Just a story, nothing more. But the prosecution sees it differently. They're not trying to present the book as direct evidence of anything criminal. They're not suggesting Wendy outlined the murder in the margins. What they are saying is that the book reflects the frustrations, grievances, and emotional tension that were allegedly building within the Adelson family. Specifically, the resentment Wendy may have felt being stuck in Tallahassee after the court refused to let her move to South Florida with her children, something she reportedly blamed Dan for. And here's where Donna comes in. According to prosecutors, Donna wasn't just a sympathetic ear. She was part of the problem-solving team. They point to emails and conversations in which Donna allegedly expressed similar frustrations. She wanted Wendy and the kids closer. She didn't like Tallahassee either. She viewed Dan as an obstacle. The book, in their eyes, doesn't just expose Wendy's frame of mind. It underscores a shared family outlook. It helps lay the emotional groundwork for why someone might want Dan Markell out of the picture. The legal tug of war here is all about admissibility with purpose. The judge has already hinted at how he's likely to rule. He's not going to let prosecutors read the book to the jury like it's story time. But he has said on the record that if Wendy testifies and if she says something that contradicts the emotional tone or details in the book, then it may be fair game. In legal terms, that means the novel could be used for impeachment. Not as proof that the story is true, but to challenge her credibility if she presents a sanitized version of events that doesn't align with what she's written in the past. That's a narrow window, but a powerful one. Jurors may never read the whole book, but even a few well-placed excerpts could be enough to plant doubt or spark clarity. In a trial where motive is essential but direct evidence is limited, every emotional breadcrumb matters. Especially if those breadcrumbs lead back to the family kitchen table where Donna Adelson allegedly sat, stirred the pot, and plotted alongside her children. But the book isn't the only point of contention. The fight over Wendy's novel is really just one front in a much larger evidentiary battle. The prosecution has been working to admit a range of communications, emails, voicemails, call records between Donna and other family members. They argue that this digital footprint tells a clear story, one of a close-knit family that didn't just share dinners, but also shared a deep desire to fix the custody situation. And if the state is to be believed, that fix came with fatal consequences. In these emails, Donna allegedly expresses concern not just for Wendy's well-being, but for her own access to her grandchildren. According to prosecutors, she repeatedly blames Dan for keeping the family divided and makes statements suggesting that legal remedies weren't working. On their own, these messages might sound like nothing more than venting, an upset mother-in-law grieving a custody battle gone sideways. But the state's theory is that these communications reveal a pattern, not isolated anger, but sustained pressure. And when added to the timeline leading up to Dan's murder, they argue the context becomes damning. The defense, of course, is pushing back hard. They say the prosecution is cherry-picking phrases and painting ordinary frustrations as sinister motives. They insist that Donna was a grandmother, not a gangster, that expressing anger over custody issues doesn't mean someone is plotting murder, and that any attempt to use emotional emails or past writings to prove a criminal conspiracy is not only misleading, it's prejudicial. That's the heart of this evidentiary fight. What should the jury hear? And what can they unhear once it's out there? Because the second someone on the witness stand quotes from a novel that sounds like a diary or reads a line from an email that feels a little too loaded, that bell can't be unrung. Jurors can be told to consider it for credibility, not guilt. But the emotional impact is real, and both sides know it. So this pretrial battle isn't just about what's legally admissible. It's about controlling the courtroom narrative. The prosecution wants to show Donna Adelson as an orchestrator, someone who didn't just complain about Dan Markell, but actively sought to remove him from the equation. The defense wants to keep her in a different light entirely, an aging mother deeply involved in her family's life, but far removed from any actual planning or violence. Every email, every phone call, every literary quote becomes another brushstroke on that canvas. And that's why this chapter of the case matters so much. The jury hasn't heard a word yet, but the attorneys are already fighting tooth and nail over the soundtrack of the trial, over which themes they'll be allowed to play and which notes will be cut from the score. Because once opening statements begin, the attorneys won't just be arguing over facts, they'll be telling stories. And those stories will either cast Donna Adelson as the grieving grandmother who lost her family to tragedy, or the woman who helped orchestrate a plan to keep her family intact by any means necessary. If you really want to understand how Donna Adelson ended up at the center of one of Florida's most tangled murder-for-hire cases, you have to go back. Not to a courtroom, not to a legal filing, but to a driveway in Tallahassee, Florida, on a quiet summer morning in 2014. That's where it started. Or more accurately, that's where it all became irreversible. On July 18th of that year, Dan Markell, a 41-year-old law professor at Florida State University, pulled into his driveway after dropping his kids off at daycare. It was just after 11 a.m. He never made it inside. A gunman approached and shot him in the head through the driver's side window. He would die the next day in the hospital. The attack was precise, professional, and had all the signs of a premeditated hit. At first glance, there wasn't a clear suspect. Dan had no known enemies of the kind you'd expect in a murder like this. He was a respected academic, known for his work in criminal law, and had no ties to anything remotely resembling organized crime. But investigators quickly began looking at the one part of his life that had been deeply strained in the years leading up to his murder. His relationship with his ex-wife, Wendy Adelson, and the bitter custody battle they were locked in over their two children. Wendy and Dan had divorced in 2013, and while the split itself was contentious, it was the issue of relocation that kept things boiling. Wendy wanted to move with the children to South Florida, where her family lived. Dan was adamant they stay in Tallahassee. A court sided with Dan, denying Wendy's relocation request, effectively trapping her in a city she no longer wanted to live in, with a man she no longer wanted anything to do with, except for the fact that he was her children's father. That custody decision set off what prosecutors have described as a wave of resentment and frustration inside the Adelson family. Emails, call records, and later trial testimony would point to a family that viewed Dan Markell as the root of the problem. And within that family, prosecutors allege Donna Adelson, Wendy's mother, emerged as a driving force behind what they argue was a plan to permanently resolve the issue. Now, Donna wasn't charged back then. In fact, for nearly a decade after Dan's murder, she remained on the outside of the courtroom while the case slowly unraveled around her. But what became clear over time, according to prosecutors, was that she wasn't just a concerned grandmother who got caught up in the fallout. She was, allegedly, part of the solution-seeking process. The people who were arrested first were the ones directly tied to the trigger. In 2016, 2 years after the murder, police arrested Sigfredo Garcia and Luis Rivera, both men from Miami, with prior criminal records. Rivera eventually flipped, taking a plea deal and testifying that Garcia pulled the trigger while he acted as the driver. According to Rivera, they were paid to carry out the hit, and the money came through a woman named Catherine Magbanua. Magbanua had connections to Garcia. She had children with him, but she also had a romantic relationship with Charlie Adelson, Donna's son, and Wendy's brother. Charlie was a Fort Lauderdale periodontist with no criminal record, but the connections were piling up. Prosecutors allege that Charlie provided the funding, coordinated with Magbanua, and ultimately helped arrange the hit. In 2022, Charlie was arrested and charged. He went to trial in 2023 and was convicted of first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and solicitation of murder. He was sentenced to life in prison. During that trial, the prosecution laid out their theory. Charlie acted as the middleman. Magbanua handled the payments and logistics, and Garcia and Rivera carried out the murder. The motive? To help his sister, Wendy, and relieve his mother, Donna, of the ongoing family tension stemming from the custody dispute. Which brings us back to Donna. For years, her name floated around the case as someone close to the action, but never formally accused. That changed in 2023 when she was arrested at Miami International Airport while allegedly preparing to board a one-way flight to Vietnam, a country with no extradition treaty with the United States. Authorities had been building their case for years, and by the time they moved in, they believed they had enough to finally charge her. Prosecutors say Donna's involvement wasn't just passive. They point to her communications with Charlie and Wendy in the months before and after the murder. They allege she was deeply involved in discussing the challenges of the custody battle, venting about Dan, and strategizing ways to regain family access to the children. Some of those communications, according to court filings, include comments about Dan being a problem that needed solving and repeated discussions about how much easier life would be if he were out of the picture. And it didn't stop after Dan was killed. According to the state, Donna continued to communicate with her family in ways that suggested knowledge and control. She was allegedly involved in coordinating family messaging, managing legal exposure, and in one now public call, even suggested ways to help Wendy deal with the situation emotionally and socially. The evidence prosecutors are leaning on includes years of emails, text messages, call logs, and statements collected from other defendants in the case. They're not claiming Donna pulled the trigger. They're not even claiming she arranged the payment herself. What they're saying is that she was part of a family conspiracy, that her role was just as critical as the others because she helped guide, encourage, and support the plan from behind the scenes. And from a legal standpoint, that's all it takes to be charged with conspiracy to commit murder. You don't have to be the shooter. You don't even have to be the one handing out the cash. If you knowingly agree to the plan and take any step to support or further it, you're in. Donna has pleaded not guilty. Her legal team is fighting the charges, arguing that the evidence is circumstantial and that the state is overreaching, trying to turn a messy, emotional family drama into a criminal conspiracy. They argue that Donna was a frustrated grandmother, not a criminal planner, that she may have said things in private moments of anger, but that doesn't make her complicit in a murder. But the prosecution sees it differently. They've already secured convictions against three key players, Garcia, Rivera, and Charlie Adelson. Catherine Magbanua was also convicted and sentenced to life, and now Donna is the last remaining member of the alleged conspiracy, still waiting for her day in court. She's currently being held without bond in Leon County. Her trial, at least for now, is set to begin in June 2025. And whether she stands as the architect of a family crime or the misunderstood matriarch of a fractured household, that's what the jury will soon be asked to decide.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.